All right. Good evening, my friends. We are on Kaf Vav Amud Aleph. We are on 26A. 26A. And we are continuing going through what one might call prime real estate in Maseches Sukkah. Obviously, we love every daf in Maseches Sukkah, though generally when if I were teaching this as an Iyun topic, an in-depth topic, and we weren't just going from cover to cover, this would be one of the areas where, certainly in yeshivas and other places where they like to spend some time unpacking these sugyos. And you can already see why that's the case. So just to give you a little bit of a roadmap of what we're going to do tonight, we're going to talk about, actually, I think we ended off talking about travelers last time. We talked about Holchei Drachim. So actually, we're going to pick up talking about Shomrim, about those who are guarding, whether they are exempt from a sukkah. We're going to talk about those who are sick or not, or uncomfortable, whether when they are exempt from a sukkah. And we're going to talk about what kind of eating and sleeping, or sleeping, is permitted outside the sukkah, what requires a sukkah itself. And then we'll talk a little bit about sleeping or snoozing with one's tefillin on toward the end. So, as I said, we're going through a lot of prime real estate here in Maseches Sukkah. These are fan favorites. Okay, so we actually, I think, I'm pretty sure we got up to the Tanu Rabbanan, which is like almost halfway down. It's right across from the Tosfos V'Apilu Chash Be'enav. It's Tanu Rabbanan Shomrei Ha'ir, the watchman of the city. That's where it starts. Okay, is it the second page in the art scroll?
I don't know.
Yeah, I got a nod from Lonnie. So those who are using the art scroll, it's
Wait,
the second page.
it's 25
26
feet? No, I'm sorry.
26
What page are we on?
26A
2
to the second power. All right. So again, remember, there's a very important concept that we've been talking about, of osik ba mitzvah pater min a mitzvah, that when you're involved in one mitzvah, you finish that mitzvah before going on to the next one when it's not feasible to do both. Now, what's interesting is, I think I mentioned this last time, possibly, the Ritva says it's not just simply that you are exempt, that you're pater from performing the second mitzvah. But in the event that it would require you to stop the first one to do the second one, you're not allowed to proceed to the second mitzvah until you have fulfilled the mitzvah you're involved in. We have that principle of Ein Ma'avir in all mitzvos, that you're not allowed to just bypass the first mitzvah for the second. Now, Toby, I think you brought up a previous time that there, I think it was Toby, or for someone else, then we'll give
I
credit to
wasn't
them.
at the last class, so.
Oh, so then maybe with someone else. Okay, someone just yell at your name if you ask this question. I guess I should be careful. The question was, don't certain mitzvahs supersede others? Meaning, I might be involved in one mitzvah, but then all of a sudden there's a levaya for a Talmud Chacham or Mikra Megillah, very relevant for Purim, that comes up, and Mikra Megillah may supersede another mitzvah that I'm in the middle of. So not all mitzvahs are created equal. That's just an important asterisk to put in there. Anyway, hopefully you've had enough time to find the place by now. Tanu Rabbanan, Shomrei Ha'ir Bayom Pot Pturim Min HaSukkah Bayom. If you are a daytime security guard, you're pater from eating, sleeping in the sukkah during the day, v'chayev b'layla. But when you get home, you're chayev to go to your sukkah. Likewise, Shomrei Ha'ir Balayla Pturim Min HaSukkah Balayla. That if you are watching it at night, then you are pater at night, v'chayavim b'yom, and you're chayav during the day when you're not working. Shemir b'yom b'yom, if you have a really tough 24-hour shift, pater min hasukkah b'yom b'yom, you are pater from the begin from the day through the nighttime. Shomrei gunu agados upardesim, those who guard the gardens and orchards, paterin b'yom b'yom, they are exempt at day and night. They get a flat-out dispensation. Wait, why is that so? Li'avdi sukkah hasam, just bring a pop-up sukkah and set up shop. So by Amar Teshu Kein Tiduru, that the one is only expected to treat their sukkah the same way they would treat their home. So the same way, I'm willing to forgo the furniture and amenities of my house to go to the field during the year, even though I know I can't bring my house along with me. Likewise, you're not expected to have to bring a pop-up sukkah along with you in such an instance. Rava says the reason that the security guards who are watching the fields do not require sukkah is because pirtza kor leganav. You're basically just inviting a thief to say, oh, that guy's singing a sukkah. I guess I'll just sneak around where the walls are blocking and I'll go steal. Now, what's interesting is you could build your sukkah, as we learned, through lavud. I didn't look deeply enough. I'm sure someone has to raise this. Remember how you could build a sukkah with, one string, 2.9 tefachim, another string, 2.9 tefachim, to build a wall? So it's not necessarily true, but I guess most sukkahs are realistically going to be made with an actual wall. So you're basically inviting a ganav to come steal behind your back while you're in the sukkah. So my benayu, what's the difference between Abai's rationale and Rava's rationale? Ika benayu, to come in natir karya depeire. When you are literally just supposed to watch a pile of fruit that's right in front of you. You're not watching a whole field, you're just watching literally a pile of fruit. So if that's your whole job, then according to Rava, you could sit in a sukkah and you could have that pile of fruit in eyesight right in front of you, right outside the sukkah. But according to Baye, you still wouldn't be chayav to make a sukkah because teishu kein tiduru, you're not expected to do more than you would during the year when you would just as well leave your house and not build some temporary residence for yourself there. Now, what's interesting is if you look at Tosvos a little further up the Amud, Dibor Amaskol Holchei Drachim Bayom. This actually, I really should have opened up with this one. So those who also travel during the daytime we mentioned, they are exempt from a sukkah. So what's this exemption rooted in? Because if you are just traveling for pleasure, for leisure purposes, then we don't have the principle of osik b'mitzvah patur min ha-mitzvah. So what reason would one be exempt anyway from a sukkah when they're traveling? So Tosa says, kol nafka miteishu kein tiduru, shekashem shana beveso enom nimnem latzitz. It's from the idea of teishu kein tiduru, as we said just before. The idea that your sukkah is not supposed to be more of an inconvenience than your actual house. And likewise, remember we learned about this and we're going to learn about it again. The idea of mitzdar patur in the sukkah, when one is distressed, they are exempt from the sukkah. Tos says it's also rooted in that idea. Because you don't set up your residence in a place that causes you distress. Little footnote over here. If you remember, we did a 10:30 shiur on this a while back. But happy to repeat for those who weren't at the 10:30. It's all right. You're not chayav to be at every shiur I give. It's totally okay. In case you needed me to say that, I love it for every opportunity that you do make it for. So we asked the following question: is there a universal dispensation in halacha called mitzdar that when I'm distressed I'm exempt, or is this unique to the laws of sukkah? It would seem that in most areas of halacha, as long as you don't have any health issues, you're expected to persevere through discomfort to perform a mitzvah. I have to get out of my house and get in my car and drive to a minyan. All right. So if that's the only thing that's standing in your way, it could be an inconvenience, but we're supposed to persevere. But why is it when it comes to sukkah, all of a sudden, when there's a substantial amount of distress, you are exempt? So, because again, it's rooted in that idea of teishu kein tiduru, Tosa says. So, it sounds actually like just a localized, unique quirk in the laws of Hilchos Sukkah, not something that applies to the vast corpus of halachic literature. Nonetheless, the Or Zeruah, and others, I'm forgetting who else made that. There is another one that makes that extrapolation. I think it's the Tshuvas of the Radvaz, says that mitzdar seems to be a universal idea, but they would have to try to figure out how that makes sense with the Gemara. Anyway, footnote on the side over there. If that's of interest, we can certainly do the shiur for another round. Back to the Gemara. We are at the words cholim umisham shehem. So we're continuing to elaborate on ideas in the Mishnah. So the Mishnah said that those who are ill and those who are servicing the people who are ill are exempt from the sukkah. Tana Rabbanan, Kola Sha'amru, Sha'amru, Erachol Sha'amru, Lo Chol She'ish Bo Sakana, Ela Afil Chol She'im Bo Sakana. So when we talk about someone who's a chola, a sick person, and someone who's ill, there can be chola she yesh bo sakana, someone who's deathly ill. Now, the Torah, the Mishnah did not need to tell us about someone who's deathly ill, but it's saying that even someone who's not deathly ill, but someone who's essentially bedridden, or or he has serious pain in his eye or in his head that is preventing him from being there, so then they are exempt from the sukkah, both them and those caring for them.
Rabbi?
Yes.
Even though they're exempt, are they over an avera when they go into the sukkah?
You're saying if they
personally? Well, no, because let's say someone is extremely ill.
But if it would negatively impact their health, then Shmarto Nafsho Seichem, we have a mitzvah to guard our health. So if going in that sukkah were to negatively impact their health, then in a marked way, then presumably yes. The issue is, it's always hard to quantify these things. Like, am I violating an Isser in the Torah every time I eat a Snickers bar? The Snickers bar is not good for my health, but do we say that one little Snickers bar is gonna what tips a scale? So that's the issue, is how do you quantify it? But if you knew for sure that this was gonna tip the scales going into sukkah, then yeah, you're not allowed to endanger yourself in any situation.
Okay, thank you.
Absolutely, Irwin. Amar Shimon Gamliel, Pam Achas, so now a few examples that concur with this. Amar Shimon Gamliel, Pam Achas Chashdi Be'enai Be'kisari Be'hitter of Yossi Be'rabi Lishon Ani Umisham Shai Chutz Sukkah. So one time, I wasn't feeling well. This comes up a lot in rabbinic literature. Apparently, they were very worried for pain in the eye. That was, I guess, something common back then. And he got a dispensation for him and those tending to him to sleep outside of the sukkah. I guess he calls Yossi Bei Rabbi, like the great Rav Yossi. So what's interesting is that, I guess, everyone feels that way after a rabbi gives him a really good heter, right? Oh, that great rabbi who gave me that awesome heter, right? I always tell people like who get very grateful after I tell them that the halakha is more lenient than they assume. I said, just remember that when you come back to me next and I tell you the halakha is more machmer than you assume. Just keep that one in the bank, okay? there's one particular person who keeps reaching out to me with kashra shilas. And like three times in a row so far, I found the solution that was that, they didn't have to kasher their whatever. And I'm like, just remember, there will be a time where I tell you there's nothing you can do. And just don't get angry at me on that one. Anyway. Rav Sharla Ravacha Bartala Magna Bechilta Basuk Mishum Baki. So, similar dispensation. You can sleep in a sukkah with the canopy that will protect you from the mosquitoes. I had to look at Rashi, which then brought me to Agosa Siyunim, which says the Yatushim. So, the mosquitoes. Even though you're not supposed to use a canopy, as we've established earlier, Tosis talks about that. Rava Sharle the Rabbi Achabar Adul Magna Bar Mimitalasa Mishum Sircha de Gargishta. Lots of fun Aramaic words right over here. So because of different kinds of Rashi says de Gargishta, he says Karka Levana Shahayu Tachim Bakarkaiza Sukkah, some kind of white earth that is used when they are essentially kind of making the ground level of the sukkah. So it has some kind of stench. Ravla tamei the marava mitzarpatim in a sukkah. And where does this all come from? Because we've established mitzdar patim in a sukkah. If you are distressed when you are in the sukkah, I mean the sukkah is causing you this tsar, as Rashi says, even though it's up for debate, you are exempt from the sukkah. Aiva non tnan cholim shamshem patim in a sukkah chola in mitzdar lo. But wouldn't I infer from the Mishnah? The Mishnah says that a chola, someone who is ill, and their attendees are exempt from the sukkah. That would seemingly imply someone who's ill is exempt from the sukkah, but someone who's just simply very uncomfortable would still be required to sit in the sukkah. No? Wouldn't that be the proper inference from the Mishnah? So Amri, so this is how you have to read it. Chola hu mishamsha baturim. When someone is ill, even his attendees, those tending to him will be exempt from the sukkah. Mitzdarhu, Amzarhu Patur Misham Shavlo. Where someone who's distressed, only a distressed person is exempt from the sukkah, but not those who are tending to him. That's the distinction. Okay. End of that piece of the Gemara. Any questions? Okay. Moving right along. One can eat an achilas arai outside the sukkah. If I remember, the Gemara here doesn't really give us a useful measurement. If I remember correctly, I think I have to look back up the actual measurement for it. What was it? It was I think as long as it's less than a kibbutza. No, it was less than a kibbutza. I have to check this up because I remember. I measured out, you know, how much of a certain bar, energy bar, I could have before going to shul without having to then take a trip to the sukkah. Because for me, we don't have a sukkah in our apartment because we're on a mid-level. So I'd have to, like, first go to the sukkah and then go all the way back around the building. So I said, if I could just eat, like, under the shear, you know what I do also? I get lots of shahakal cereals. I usually don't get all the sugar cereals during the year. But it's my special sukkah treat. I get all the shahakal cereals. That way, I could have a pseudo meal without having to travel all the way to this. Obviously, for some meals, I do travel with sukkah. You know, if I'm having Mizonos, whatever, but if I need something really quick and I can't keep going back and forth, so then that's what saves me. Anyway, to the Gemara. So we said that one can have a light snack outside the sukkah. Ukamachios arrived, but how much is that? How do we quantify it? We're not going to get an answer that we're all going to feel satisfied with, but Arav Yosef, Tarti Atlas Bay, 2 to 3. Eggs. So let's just say, even though this is all up for debate, a kizayis is, let's just say, 1.5 ounces, and a kibitza is twice the amount of that, so let's say it's around 3 ounces, and now it's like 3 times 2 or 3 times 3, so 6 or 9 ounces. So anything under that is essentially considered an achila sarai, a light snack, and you can eat it outside the sukkah. But wait, Amar Alei Abai, what many of us might be thinking, but I don't know, for some people, 6 to 9 ounces of some kind of food actually is enough to constitute a meal. Rather, just the what's considered a light snack, like when a student is rushing off to shiur and he just needs to quickly throw something in his mouth to satiate himself on his way, right? You're running out the door to catch train to work, like, oh, quickly eat some breakfast, and then you run off. So the issue is that that's very illustrative. It evokes a nice picture in my head, but it doesn't actually give me a bottom line shear to work with. But be it as it may, that's what Abaye says. Taner Rabbanan, Ochan Achias Rai Chutz Sukkah, and Yeshim Shias Rai Chutz Sukkah. While one can eat a light snack outside the sukkah, one is not allowed to even take a nap outside the sukkah. A nap, we usually say, is about 30 minutes, like under 30 minutes. So my time, Amar Rav Ashi, Gezeira Shema Yirdam, because we're afraid that, you know, once you fall asleep, you know, it's you can fall asleep. From the Gemara in Tainus. Why am I forgetting the name? Help me out, guys. The circles. Oh my God, this is embarrassing. I can't remember. Remember this Mishnah in Tainus over there, where basically says, I'm not going to come out of the circle until you make it rain. Why am I forgetting the name? Someone help me out over here.
Choni Hamagel?
Thank you, Erwin. Choni Hamagel. That's what, right? So thank you. See, Erwin learned Tainus with us. So you go, right? So goes to sleep and then wakes up, or Rip Van Winkle, and everyone talks about the connection between them, right? So the issue is, you go to sleep and you can wake up 70 years later for all you know. You know, once you're asleep, you can't really control that. So Amar Leia by Eloha Tania Yoshin Adam Shinas Arai Bitfilin Avaloshinas Keva Lech Shema Yirdam. So Abai says, is that really true? Because we say that one is allowed to take a light nap when they are wearing their tefillin. Aye, same issue. How is one allowed to take a nap when wearing tefillin? Maybe they'll fall asleep. Sounds like we're not afraid that when someone takes a power nap, they'll actually really fall into a slumber. Some Rav Yosef, Rav Eloi, the Moser Sheinaso Lacherim. It's when you ask someone to wake you up. If you say, I'm taking a power nap, can you wake me up in 20 minutes? So that's fine. By the way, that's what alarm clocks do nowadays. One can use an alarm clock. I'm not joking, actually. Like in Halacha, for instance, one's not supposed to have a meal before eating, like a meal before they eat, before they recite mincha. They're not supposed to have your meal then. So that it is, you set an alarm to remember to have a mincha. You can have your dinner before going to mincha. It's fine. Similar kind of ideas. So, but the issue is maskvle rav misharshe arvecha arva tzarech. But the guy who's supposed to wake you up, he's going to need someone to remind him to wake you up. You see, but the alarm clocks, if the technology works, it doesn't need to be reminded. It's already set. How do I know when someone's going to take a light nap? So this is like the difference of, you know, he says when you put your head between your, on your knees, but I'll give you my practical example. When I know that I want to sleep less than 30 minutes, instead of going to my bed, I would just go on the couch. And the couch is comfortable enough that I can nap, but not so comfortable that I'm going to conk out for a few hours. So maybe that's the, at least for me, that would be the analogy. Rava Amar ain't kevelashina. Rava says, we don't play games like this. Once you're asleep, sleep is called sleep. We don't start saying, was it 30 minutes, an hour? Sleep is sleep, and that is a problem. Okay. Now we're going to have three opinions that seemingly contradict each other about whether one is allowed to nap or sleep with their tefillin. Tani chadam. Yashin on the betfillin, shina sarai, avaloshin as keva. One could take a nap with tefillin, but not slumber. Taina idach, being keva, being arai. The other Bryson and Bryce number two says, you could sleep as long as you want with them. Taina idach. And the third Bryson says, lo keva, velo arai. You're never allowed to take even a nap. So, okay, we have three different permutations represented by three different prices. Are they all in, you know, disagreement with each other, or are they all just addressing three different scenarios? The answer is the latter. Lokatia. Ha denakalahu biyade. The third price is discussing when you are holding your tefillin. So if you're holding your tefillin in your hands, even if you take a nap, we're afraid you're going to chas v'shalom drop them. So that's why you're not even allowed to nap when you're holding them. Number two is ha demanche bereshe. When you are wearing them, you're allowed to nap, but you're not allowed to take a long sleep. Now, I know this sounds really weird because nowadays we only wear tefillin for chakras, but back in the good old days, they used to wear tefillin all day. And so Rashi says that, you know, as we're about to see, dol nisna toru l'malachi asharis. The idea to take your tefillin off and have to wrap them all up and then put them in a bag and then take them out and wrap them all again, that every second that you need to do something else, that's just not practical. So what's the third price to talk about? And ha, the par sutra ilave. When you put you cover it, and that way, when you cover it temporarily, you are allowed to even sleep as long as you want because the tefillin are put in a respectful place. And there's no concern of having an unclean body while the tefillin is not on your body. Finally, last piece of Gemara for this evening, building on this point. Ukama shena sarai, okay. Well, now that we're talking about a nap versus a proper slumber, what is the definition of a nap? And again, it's not the most clear answer, but you'd have to do the calculations. Tani Rami Bar Yecheskel k'de hilach me ama, the amount of time it takes to walk 100 amos. An ama is about a foot and a half. So a foot and a half, right, times 100, so 100, I think 150 feet. How long does it take to walk 150 feet? A minute, 2 minutes? I have no clue. it's like whenever Google Maps says it takes 7 minutes to walk from here to there, I'm like, my speed, or is this like an Olympic jogger? I'm not sure who they're figuring out based on.
An average pace is about a minute, minute and a half.
Minute and a half? Okay, very good. So, okay, I wasn't far off, right? So between a minute to 2 minutes, I said. Okay, minute and a half to minute. Perfect. So, tani nami hachi, and we have a brisa that supports this. Hayashu in tefillin v'ro keri, if someone is sleeping with their tefillin and they have a seminal emission, ochis beretsua, he should grab the strap to take it off, but not the actual bias or any part of that actual casing itself. Now, this sheet of Rabbi Yaakov, the fact he's giving you these instructions presupposes that you're allowed to take a long sleep with it on. But the rabbanan say you're only allowed a nap, and how long is a nap? It's literally just a it's like a nice long tachanun. I remember growing up, here at shul, tachanun is like done. I'm like halfway through Shomer Yisrael, and they're up to Ashrei. So back when I was in high school in Masifta, so people had a lot of kavana, so it was like great. It's just like Vayomer David. You're like, oh, that was great, So, like a minute and a half to 2 minutes, get a little power nap in over there. That's exactly what that was. All right, that brings us to the top of Chavav. I'm in base, my friends, and God willing, we will pick it up with that next week. Wishing you all a wonderful Shabbos, and just a warning to you all: I'm in the sanctuary this week, so you can plan accordingly, whether you think that's a good thing or a bad thing. Okay. All right. Take care, everybody. Good Shabbos.
Good Shabbos.